Welcome to the Recruitment Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Tom Birkinshaw, and today we are joined by Mark Whitby, founder of The Resilient Recruiter and The Recruiter Coach. Mark always knew he wanted to work in sales, and after traveling to the UK from Canada and speaking with a number of recruiters, he decided to take the plunge and become a recruiter himself. Mark worked incredibly hard in the industry, but would find himself struggling to keep up. But being incredibly driven, Mark decided to search for a coach and mentor to help himself improve his skills and move up the leaderboard. From working with the coach, Mark decided his true passion was actually learning and development within the recruitment industry. Since then, Mark has set up The Recruitment Coach in 2001 and a very successful podcast, The Resilient Recruiter, to do just that. Mark talks to us today about what coaching and mentoring can do for you and your business. Mark, thank you very much for joining me on the Recruitment Entrepreneur Podcast. It's great to have you here today.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. It feels quite strange to be on this side of the interview.
Oh, no, absolutely. Podcaster, recruitment trainer, so recruitmentcoach.com and Resilient Recruiter, well-known podcaster. How many podcasts have you done so far?
I think we're up to 160. Wow. Thereabouts. I can't remember. I've lost count now.
A lot of people you've spoken to. So how many times have you been on the other side of the mic? A few now.
Only a couple, yeah.
Right, okay. So
role reversal. Do more.
Well, don't tell me how well or badly I did by the end of it.
I'm sure it'll be great.
So starting with a podcast then, obviously kind of working backwards in your career, obviously it's kind of not the latest part of your career. It's part of what you do. How did you get into podcasting and why? Why did you decide to go down the route of podcasts?
Okay, great question. So it's actually something I've always done just without recording. So for the last 21 years, I have had just fascinating conversations with really successful recruiters and recruitment business owners around the world. Some of them were clients, some of them were friends, some were mentors of mine. And, you know, I thought, we should be recording this. This is gold. And then it would benefit, you know, more people. So it just seemed like a very natural thing to do. So we launched the podcast in December 2019. But actually, I had the idea about 3 or 4 years previously. But and my biggest regret is not starting sooner.
Yeah.
But I just, the whole idea, even though I wanted to do it, I was intimidated and sort of overwhelmed just because there's so many moving parts that I kind of didn't know where to start. But it was something I wanted to do for a long time.
I think looking at podcasts, obviously they've now been out and around for a while. Do you think from a business point of view, originally when podcasts came out, it was storytelling and things like that. It was very limited on kind of the mentorship, you know, the phrase being thrown around, obviously thought leadership and being that thought leader in your industry. Do you reckon there's a mind, you know, mentality shift of actually it's okay to share? You know, you're not giving away kind of any secret sauce about, you know, going back in 2015. Do you think people are a bit more reluctant on that? And actually now it's kind of like, well, everyone's kind of trying to help each other out here and you're not giving away everything a part of your business. But that thought leadership piece is a bit more acceptable to do.
100%. Yeah, it is easier and easier to get people to agree to come on a podcast because, first of all, most people understand the concept and hopefully may have listened to podcasts themselves. And people are much more aware of the importance of building your personal brand these days and the potential benefits to them of coming on a podcast. So yeah, definitely.
Jumping right back to the start, how did you end up in recruitment?
Okay, great question. So I moved over to the UK when I was 23 and I met a Scottish girl who is now my wife. But actually I had dual citizenship because my dad's from London.
Oh, okay.
So came over to the UK, knew I wanted to work in sales, but didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. Interviewed for lots of jobs and ended up speaking to a few recruiters thinking, I could do that. That looks dead easy. Of course, it's much harder than
the reality,
right, on the outside. So got into recruiting and actually found it really difficult. I was not a natural at it. But what I was super driven. I was so hungry, Tom, I would smash through walls to be successful. So I was working incredibly hard but the results that I was generating just, didn't match up with how much effort I was putting in. So I was about halfway down the leaderboard. At this stage, working for a firm, there was maybe 180, 200 recruiters. And I was kind of middle of the pack, and I did not like that at all. And I wanted to move up. So I ended up hiring my own coach. And it was kind of a secret. I didn't know how my company would react. So I paid for it myself. And I hired this amazing guy called Ravi Tangri. And he helped me double my billings in 90 days.
Wow.
And that was just such a transformative experience. I became the top producer on my team out of 9 people. I was never one of the biggest billers in the company, but I was in the top 15% out of 200 people. And that kind of planted the seed for me to think, you know, wow, maybe someday I could help other people to improve their results and, you know, find this job more fun and more fulfilling.
Did your company ever think, what the hell's going on here? 90 days ago, he was sitting in the middle of the leaderboard and now he's in the top quarter.
Yeah, but maybe they did, I don't know.
So you felt then, obviously, that success that you were producing replicated, obviously, the effort that you were putting in at that point. How long did you stay at that company for?
I was there 3 years in total, and I'd been a couple of years with another recruiting firm before that. So, and at that point, I realized, like, I liked recruiting. I was good at it. I wasn't fantastic at it, to be honest, Tom. I was good at it. I enjoyed it. But I felt my true calling was actually learning and development.
Yeah.
And decided to combine those two things and, you know, get into the learning and development side, but stay, you know, focused on the recruiting industry.
So mid to late 20s then, you did your 3-4 years at the recruitment company. And then, so did you set up on your own? Is that where the recruitment coach came from
at that point? Yeah, exactly. So that was 2001.
Wow.
Yeah. So 21, coming up for 22 years ago.
Was that quite, I mean, you know, if I look back on my career, if I was that age with only kind of 3 or 4 years experience, you must
well,
have had
5 years experience. 5 years stage, experience. Yeah.
Was there, you know, a bit of imposter syndrome that you were going to go and train and teach people?
Yes.
You know, to your own self-admission, like you weren't, you know, the number one biller, but you just knew how it worked. Was that quite a scary point in time?
It was, but I kind of always wanted to work for myself. And so it was 100%, like starting a business is scary and taking that plunge. But it's so exciting at the same time that you kind of like, it's a combination of fear and excitement. I also think I was naive. I was full of the arrogance of youth and not realizing how much I didn't know.
Yeah.
And actually that was quite eye-opening because going out, now there were certain things I was really good at. I was good at selling retained search. And so that was one of my first workshops was the secrets of selling retained search. And I was helping contingency recruiters to get paid up front, which, and I was also good at business development. So there was a couple of things that I felt confident in, you know, in training others to do. But when I got out into the big wide world, I realized I knew nothing. Like my recruitment knowledge was insignificant in the grand scheme of things. And so what's been super interesting for me in the last 21 years is now I've worked with over 10,000 recruiters in 34 countries and some of the biggest billers on the planet, some of the most successful recruiting firm owners in the world. And the beautiful thing is, although people are hiring me to coach them, the reality is I'm learning from them at the same time. And so every single person that I work with, I'm learning a ton as well. So this has just given me such a privilege to like distill the best strategies, techniques, tactics, habits, mindsets of some of the most successful people in the business.
I guess it's kind of ignorance is bliss in the mid-20s.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, great age to start a business, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, at that stage, I had no kids.
Yeah.
You know, the risk was
low.
Was relatively low. And I you know, grinding away for the first few years, cold calling, networking, you know, working to get referrals. And then the 2008 recession hit.
Yeah.
And that was a massive blow. Like I'd built up this nice six-figure training and coaching business. And that was such a setback. I lost like 50% of my revenue overnight. And by that stage, I had 2 kids already and 1 more on the way.
Yeah.
And that's when I had to really dig deep and go back to the drawing board in terms of learning, you know. And that's really when I started focusing on digital marketing and content marketing, which has ultimately led to this podcast. Yeah. But so, you know, that the last maybe, 15 years, I've really focused on inbound marketing, digital marketing, branding, and that has revolutionized my business and really turned things around for me.
Yeah.
And then over time, people started asking for my help with those things.
I think I said, you know, 10,000 people, which is obviously an incredible statistic. I think the phrase that we use quite often here is, you know, there's no monopoly on wisdom. Myself and, you know, everybody else, is there's a lot to be learned from other people.
Definitely.
Then obviously 2008 passed, you got through the recession, mm-hmm. you continued on doing what you enjoyed and loved doing, you built up your business successfully. Obviously we're a business that, you know, backs entrepreneurs. Would you say that you would call yourself an entrepreneur? You know, looking back, would you say you had those qualities of what people class as an entrepreneur these days? Would you say that about yourself?
Okay. Latterly, yes. Mm. But actually, in the early days, no. There's a big difference between being self-employed and being a true entrepreneur. Yep. And I didn't understand that at first, because I liked to call myself an entrepreneur, yep. and I thought of myself as an entrepreneur. But looking back, as a one-man band, solo, you know, solo professional, then it's really more like having a job. You do everything yourself. You know, you do the sales, you do the delivery, marketing, your tax return, your VAT return, your, you know, everything is on your shoulders. Yeah. And to me, being an entrepreneur is more about building something, and that involves other people and is a bit bigger in scope and yeah. in impact. And I've really come into my own, Tom, in the last 3 or 4 years of this journey and started to build a team myself and be yeah. able to reach and impact more people.
And so that kind of is in conjunction when you started the podcast.
Yeah, there's a few things that have lined up. One is getting the right business model.
Yep.
Second is starting to build a team. So I hired a fantastic right-hand person, Leanne Jones-Hunt. And what two people, it's like 1 + 1 = 3, like just a massive difference, which I didn't really appreciate how much of a difference that would make, having the right people on board. Plus we have two team members in the Philippines, and we are going to be hiring more people this year, plus the podcast, which has just amplified everything.
So really now, I would say then you do have all the traits of an entrepreneur. You're now scaling your business.
Yeah, I'm scaling now. I feel like now that I'm coming up for 50. I'm going to be 50 in a couple of months. So I'm late bloomer, but yeah.
So going back to then the podcast, you remember who your first person you interviewed was?
Yeah, of course. The first person was Greg Savage.
Yeah.
And I went for him intentionally because I wanted to get a big name, someone who had a following themselves. And, you know, a lot of people when they start a podcast, they start with their own network, people they already know, which I understand, and it makes sense because it's a way of warming up and getting, you know, comfortable before you kind of start interviewing complete strangers. And fortunately, I did already know Greg, but I am kind of the mindset, like, aim big, because you want to really have a, you know, if you want to launch your podcast and get momentum quickly, then you want to interview people who ideally themselves have a following of the exact people that you want to reach.
So you've done 160 episodes now, I think over 3 years.
Yeah.
All that you can listen to, obviously, on your website. Is there anybody that you've, you know, obviously Greg Savage being one of them, is there anybody you've been trying to get that you've not had yet?
So honestly, interviewing James twice was like a dream come true. Like, the funny thing is, I set a goal of interviewing James like maybe 10 or so years ago, even before I had a podcast. It was something I wanted
to. And I think that was when James Khan started up Recruitment Entrepreneur, was 10 years ago, 19 years.
Was it? Okay, you go. Yeah, well, it was when I read his book, and I was like, someday I'm going to interview James. And I had no idea how that was going to happen. I didn't know anyone who knew him or anything like that. But at this stage, it's not that everyone says yes, but the majority of people who I approach do. I'll tell you one, maybe you guys can help me with an introduction here, is I would love to interview Rosalene Blair. And I have not been able, I've tried email, LinkedIn, a few things, they're bouncing back to me. So obviously,
persistence is key.
Yeah,
and
true.
We can see what we can do.
Thank you.
So you mentioned after 2008, you focused on digital marketing, kind of looking at your business model.
Yeah.
How have you found that change for yourself from when you first started doing that?
is massive. Like, you know, I've tried so many things, Tom, and a lot of them didn't work.
Yeah.
Some of them did, like, worked okay. Some of them worked well. But by far, the podcast has been the best thing that I've ever done in terms of, you know, the impact on my business from a marketing point of view.
And have you found then, going back to the point that it's just, you know, even from what I do on a day-to-day business, when you look at all these new sales tools, these marketing tools, the silver bullets that everyone's promising you, yeah. You know, how have you found keeping up with the transformation and even kind of looking into this year when, you know, there's a lot of AI chat, Q4 last year particularly, with Microsoft, OpenAI, things like that. Does that play a role going forward, do you think, for yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you can't rely on just one thing. You have to have multiple marketing strategies that you're deploying at any one time, because there's a kind of compound effect of, you know, combining different tools and strategies. And you have to experiment to figure out what's going to work for you. And we have 50 members now in our coaching program, and everyone's really like keen on automation and different technology and stuff like that. So we have a really good understanding of what's out there and what's working for people. But and automation is great, and it has its place in terms of being able to scale up your outreach and to save time with business processes. But what you achieve through a podcast or other types of marketing like this is more of a human connection, which you can't really get through other mediums. It's very intimate, and people are spending time with you, which is just so powerful. Like, I can't think of any other medium where you can achieve that.
So although it's kind of bigging yourself up a little bit, 160 episodes is no mean feat. There's a lot of pre-work that goes into podcasts, a lot of research, strategy, equipment, and actually the hardest of all, some of the times, is actually getting the person, to your point earlier. What do you think sets your podcast success apart from others?
So the key to having a successful podcast is just simply to keep working at it and not to give up. The only way you can really fail is if you A, never get started, or B, you start but then it just tails off and you get busy and distracted with other things and you don't keep it up. So
consistency being key at this point. 100%.
Like that, if there's anything that I attribute my success to, it's just simply like keep going at it, and you know, you make all the mistakes and you figure it out, you improve as you go along, and eventually you just get more and more momentum. That is the beauty. This thing has such a long tail, and that is the beauty of it, is it is like a snowball effect, because you get subscribers and then that builds. And then like, my favorite graph, Tom, is I log into Libsyn, which is the podcast host platform that we use to syndicate the podcast. Yeah. And the graph of the number of downloads over time, I think we've had something like 160,000 downloads at this point. I've got my sights on 1 million downloads, I think, which blows my mind. But, you know, when you see that graph and it just keeps growing over time. But of course, that can only happen if you keep working at it.
To your point earlier, you know, deploying different marketing strategies consistently, putting the time and effort. I think obviously you described it with your business. You're doing the tax returns, your HR, you're doing the actual job you're meant to be doing. What would your advice be to, you know, say recruitment companies that are listening to this and they're sitting there going, how can we be different? I think, you know, there's 80,000 recruitment companies registered in the UK, I think, in 2022 in total. It's a really saturated market, and to be the good ones are exceptionally good and do exceptionally well. If they're sitting there here going, we're so busy, what would your advice be to them if they were thinking about, you know, whether it's podcasts or anything else, going, you know, investing some time into it? Is there value for them to start doing this or looking at this sort of medium?
Absolutely. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a podcast, although that is my personal preference, but we call this the expert interview strategy. And so it could be a podcast, it could be a video, like a more shorter video interview, it could be even a written interview. But the beauty of this strategy is that it's sort of a business development strategy combined with an inbound marketing strategy. Let me explain what I mean by that. So imagine that, you know, we all know how difficult it can be to acquire new clients, to get people's attention, to get them to even talk to you in the first place, much less to do business with you. So this is kind of a magic way of getting in the door and building a relationship with someone is stop trying to, I don't mean stop trying to pitch your business. Of course, we want to do business, but instead of prioritizing, you know, getting jobs on or getting, you know, meetings to pitch your business, then inviting someone to be a guest on your podcast, for example, is a really disarming way of entering into a relationship with someone. And it, you know, it is very different to what other recruiters are trying. You know, they'll be getting approached by recruiters all the time, but you're not asking for their business. You're inviting them to be a guest on your show, which is a platform for them to get free PR, to attract talent to their company, to attract investors or other types of opportunities, build their personal brand. And so it's you're inducing the law of reciprocity here, and you're building a relationship first, which then could lead down the road to them doing business with you. So if you're strategic about who you invite to be on your show, you can end up winning some of those people as clients. At the same time, you're generating very high quality, industry-specific content that is going to appeal to your niche market. And best of all, and the barrier to doing content marketing, a lot of recruiters share with me, is they're like, Mark, I don't feel like I'm an expert. Or like, what do I have to say that my audience is going to be interested in? Which actually I think isn't true. Like, you do have more knowledge and expertise and insight than you may give yourself credit for. But this is a kind of way where you're not, you know, like your guest is in the hot seat. They're the one who's delivering the content, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's a way of you delivering valuable content and insight to your audience, but leveraging other people's knowledge. But the beauty of it is that their credibility and authority rubs off on you. So as the host or the facilitator, the one who's producing this content, you are seen to be rubbing shoulders with all these like impressive and well-known individuals in your market, which then confers a sort of authority by association on you. And then eventually you become famous or semi-famous in your industry as well.
I think that's a really, really interesting point. I mean, you look at all the guests that you've had, and obviously, you know, you had you've got recruitment coach, you know, and I think a point you made was you are a lot more knowledgeable than you think. And I think, you know, we see that all the time. We invest with people in all ages and all experiences. And actually, when you start talking to people, I think the main thing that I found personally is a lot of people have the same problems or issues, different markets, different sectors, different industries. But at the same time, there are a lot of problems or issues that arise that are identical. So kind of going back to like our really earlier point of that thought leadership, you're creating that content, you're creating that thought leadership. And there's actually a lot of people that will sit there going, oh, I could do something completely different, but I completely get what you're saying. How have you handled that? And actually, you've just had your opinion. You may have done it your way. You may have followed somebody else's and given your advice. Is then you become that thought leader. And then obviously, you know, the host, if I look at the people that I've interviewed, James Kahn, CFOs, CEOs of multi-million pound businesses, I've learned a ridiculous amount.
Absolutely.
In a short period of time. And you do become, you know, it's a bit like being a sponge. You know, there's not a lot of, not to put like the job down, but it's not a lot of skill from my part. We obviously preempt the questions, what we want to talk about, the topic, but that knowledge is on the other side. And I'm sitting there listening to it going, wow, that's really incredible. And I come away super knowledgeable afterwards.
Yes, absolutely. I would do this even if there was no commercial benefit, Tom, because I just love learning from other smart people. And there's a huge benefit, even just from my own learning and development, or you know, whoever chooses to pursue this strategy.
So with the podcast then, obviously, the good thing is you've done recruitment, you know, you went off your own back and got a mentor and a coach to learn from that, which then drove you down the career path that you went on. The podcast is off the back of that. Your content obviously was kind of not pre-written, obviously, but you know, a lot of people who go into podcasts have to think about what they're doing, things like that. I guess from an L&D perspective, how much value then do you put in that? When you've worked with clients, you know, over 10,000 in 34 countries, what value have you seen off the back of the recruitment coach in the L&D sector, you know, really pushing and scaling businesses?
I mean, as you would expect, I'm a massive believer in learning and development, which is kind of why I went into it, because I always loved learning and growing and improving. And so there's two perspectives of this. One is we've attracted some incredibly big billers to our program. And now these are people who don't really need training. It's not like they have major deficiencies that they're trying to solve. But what you tend to find is the people who are at the top of their game are of the mindset that they constantly are investing in themselves and they're looking to improve. They're never satisfied. They always want, because things don't stay static, right? The industry changes and they are in pursuit of excellence, and they just love, you know, learning, and they're students of the game. And this becomes even more important if you want to scale and grow a company. You know, the impact of L&D really can't be understated, in the sense that what I think a lot of owners don't realize if they want to scale is that if you're a recruiter or even a solo, you know, solo recruiter, solo producer, then it's all about production, making placements. But if you are going to become an entrepreneur and grow a business, your job is no longer producing. Your job is hiring and training and developing recruiters.
Yeah.
That is it, really what a recruitment business does, is hire great people, train them, develop them, and retain them. That is your number one job as the CEO of a recruitment business. And if you fail to do that, then number one, you're not gonna attract the best people, because that's what people are looking for these days. And number two is, well, you're not gonna retain them if they plateau and they feel like they're no longer progressing and learning. And number three, you can't scale a business if you're gonna keep doing everything yourself. You have to develop people to take more and more leadership roles within your firm, right? So that all comes down to L&D.
And I think that's a really valid point. To attract the best talent, you've got to showcase that you're one of the best businesses out there. You've got to attract people who want to work for you. And by doing that is investing in L&D. Going forward then, recruitment coach and obviously Resilient Recruiter, what's up for this year? What's your focus on? You said 1 million downloads for the podcast?
Well, maybe not this year, but that's...
In the future?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so what's the short-term plan for the Resilient Recruiter and the recruitment coach?
Yeah, so in terms of the podcast, it's we're going to level up our video production, because right now we've just really concentrated on getting the audio really good and attracting really good quality guests. I think if you have really great guests, people who are generously sharing, you know, not just their successes, but their mistakes and failures and what they've learned from them, then, you know, ultimately the content is the most important piece. And then the audio is really important for a podcast.
Yeah.
But I guess the missing piece for us that we have set our sights on this year is really getting the video production to be super professional as well. So you have that to look out for on the Resilient Recruiter. Our YouTube videos, like, we really haven't really concentrated on it. So we're going to be focusing on that this year. And then in terms of the business, like, we're working right now with about 50 recruitment business owners from around the world, mostly in the UK and the US, a few in Europe, and a mixture of solo, you know, preneurs, and then companies that are scaling. And we want to double that and, you know, get up to 100 people in our sort of community of recruiting leaders.
So quite a year ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited. This is going to be an awesome year.
So you should hit 250 podcasts by the end of the year, do you reckon? Or over 200?
We'll get over 200, yeah. I was tempted to, like, produce two a week. Mm. And my podcast manager, Rachel, was like, slow down, Mark.
You know, it's a lot of work.
Let's let's just be super consistent at one out a week. Because actually, Rachel, I need to give Rachel credit for it. She manages the podcast and does, like, I get to do the fun part, which is sitting down with people who are interesting and having these awesome conversations. I'm involved, obviously, in choosing who we're going to go after and invite to come on the show. But she does everything else. We have like a 38 step process for planning, producing, and promoting the podcast.
Wow. I might need to steal that from you.
Well, we've actually developed a whole course on how to launch and grow a successful podcast. I'm welcome to share that with you guys if you like.
Well, I'm like you, you know, the front end of it, but the hard work is done by Sophia in the back end. So yeah, it's a lot of time and effort goes into it. You know, even from our side, going back to kind of what we train or what we work with, obviously our partners in the portfolio, is where there's opportunity for growth and scale. You know, when you're looking at algorithms and kind of going back to your point on video, everybody knows with the algorithms, LinkedIn, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, is you've got to be consistent. I think you touched on it before, whether it's podcasts or any marketing strategy, and be consistent and evolve, learn from it and evolve it. And I think video has obviously in the last 5 or so years, and even more so, you know, post-COVID, become really important. But the time and effort that goes into that in the back end and the pre-production, during production and post-production, is, I think, one a week is, yeah, a full-time job. So I think Rachel's probably right. Two a week, sorry, was quite optimistic.
We'll get there. I mean, we've helped 4 of our clients to launch their own podcast just in the last 2 months. About 20% of our clients have podcasts. Probably because a lot of our clients found out about us through our podcast. Yeah. So they already kind of they listen to podcasts and they enjoy that medium. But we're big fans of it.
Have you had any disasters?
Oh, we've made so many. We've made every mistake it's possible to make, Tom. And I think it's a little bit like recruitment. There's so many things that can go wrong that are outside your control when you're trying to make placements and put deals together. And you just need to, once you learn what those are, you anticipate them and try and put measures in place to prevent them. But
Has that led then to the 38 steps of how to produce a podcast?
Exactly. Every time we make a mistake, oh, there's another step that goes into our process. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Mark, hugely insightful. I think, you know, a lot, again, going back to thought leadership, I think on various levels, L&D, podcast, strategy, really fascinating. And like we said earlier, it's been great chatting and me sitting here absorbing all the knowledge you've got, the 38 steps that you've got to produce a podcast and everything else. And I think really insightful, and really look forward to hearing more about your podcasts and the guests you've got on in the future.
Thanks, Tom. And thanks to you and Sophia for the opportunity.
Anytime. Thanks, Mark.